Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. I am Margaret Katz-Kann, and I'm here today with my friend and partner and intrepid warrior, David Langiuli. Hey, David.
Hey, Margaret, good to see you.
Yeah, so today we have something super cool, fun, different, lots of woo. We are going to talk about David's new book. We have historically interviewed authors on the podcast, and David is an author, has written several books, actually, but we're going to talk about his most recent book, which is called Using Your Mind for a Healthier and Happier Life. So I'm glad to have you here, David. I feel like I have a guest today on the podcast.
I'm so delighted to be a guest on your podcast, Margaret
I think you
and
forgot the
David.
word prestigious when you were describing
Prestigious.
the
Well,
podcast.
this may, yeah, it is quite a prestigious podcast. We want to let the audience know that the Fundraising Leadership podcast is going to be transforming into a new version here,
We're getting a rebrand.
a rebrand, and we're
Yeah.
playing with some different names, but we're thinking about calling it the Leadership Spelunk.
Yep, that's right. So get out your flashlights and no, we're gonna get out our flashlights.
And we're going to do some deep dives, sort of dropping into the deep, dark crevices of leadership and personal development. And so that's, stay tuned for that. But as soon as that podcast is live, maybe we'll do one more podcast and point you over there so you can download those episodes as they become available.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So I'm gonna pivot back to the book. This book is structured as sort of short essays, which I also saw as just real nuggets of wisdom. You know, it seemed, David, like these are all topics that you've had some learning on yourself, sometimes through a download, sometimes through a falling down, I feel like, and that, you know, you've really spent some time thinking about them. I of course do always like hearing what inspired people to choose a certain topic or to head off in this direction. So I'd love to ask you that to start with.
So the inspiration came the first, there are about 30 some odd essays in this collection that I've written over the course of about a year. And the first third or so are based on a collection of sayings of the Buddha called the Dhammapada. And the Buddha is like Christ and a lot of other sages from antiquity. They didn't write anything down, but their students or the disciples or their followers wrote stuff down. And so this collection of sayings of the Buddha are reportedly have been written down by his initial students and conveyed over the centuries. And they came to me and inspired me to write some of those essays.
Cool. That's such a great lead-in because I did notice in some of those early chapters that the names of the chapters and the topics really kind of set up a binary, like love, hate, pleasure, pain. And in the coaching world, we actually try often to avoid, like, you only have two choices. And so I'm sort of curious, like there's a lot of wisdom here, but why you sort of chose or why the Buddha has you choose these two kind of different poles to write about.
Well, the Buddhist philosophy is one of non-duality.
Yeah.
So what Buddhist teaching is centered on, among other many other things, is that the world appears to be a series of opposites, like love and hate, for example. And we know that there's a whole spectrum between love and hate. And as I say in that particular essay, you could not know one but for the other. They are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, which is like where the
But when
wisdom of
we,
binaries, right?
yeah, but what happens is we polarize around one, being one way or another. So, for example, right now, well, if you were to dip into the Christian teaching, it's all about love. That's what, Christ's teaching was all about. And as an antidote to hate. And boy, we could use some of that in our society right now. A little bit more love, a little less hate, and probably over millennia. I think this is an old story for human beings, love and hate. And they both exist and in their strong and mild forms. But generally speaking, when we polarize, like even if you're just polarized around love, for example, and that's an intention you have for living that way. And certainly it's an intention I have for living that way. And I would call it more compassion. Some people would just call that love. Except when you can't generate compassion for somebody else and you really are feeling you're a bit of hatred, how do you be with that? That's some of the work that you and I do as with coaches, as coaches with clients.
Well, one of the things that you wrote about, and I've heard you speak to this before, is there's not just one kind of love, right? There's so many different. And so I think sometimes when we are trying to cultivate love, we're going to a more romantic love or a more sort of traditional space of love. And yet there are many, many, many types of love and flavors and textures of the ways that we feel.
We might say in that particular essay, I bring in C.S. Lewis and his Four Loves, which I recommend, that book to the audience, or you could just read that little essay in
This
my
is not
book.
in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. This is a different C.S. Lewis book.
Right. C.S. Lewis wrote a lot of books, not the least of which, probably one of his most impactful works of nonfiction is The Four Loves. And, he describes friendship. Well, he describes Eros, right? First, right? This strong magnetic attraction towards someone
Romantic
and
love and attraction
romantic love.
love.
Yes. And but you and I have a different kind of love. And these things tend to blur or evolve into the other, but we have a what you might call the friendship, the love of friendship. And he
I think
talks about
the ways that we love our children are yet different again.
and
And
that is
sometimes the
another
way
way.
that we love a public figure or an author who we don't even know, right? There's a different kind of love
That's
because we honor and admire or respect them.
yeah, that would be another form. Oh, I love that person. You'll hear that expression, right? Oh, I love them, And then there's just this, I do think at the highest levels, we might even say that you could even say the love of God is another form of love, or the love of spirit. And a very deep connection with source, another way of saying that. So these are nuanced for sure, and some of that's in the book.
I'm just thinking, just riffing on this topic of love and compassion, and it's a period where, a lot of people are feeling a lot of hatred and a lot of polarization. And what kinds of love do you think are possible? I mean, you don't have to have the answer. I'm just it's such a good thing to talk about. Like, how do we even start softening into conversations and away from this place?
Well, I like what you say. It's a softening, right? Right now we have a lot of hardening. So is it possible, say, for anyone in the audience who's experiencing, various levels of hatred, anger and frustration and agitation and however you might express your emotions right now. Maybe we're going to do a whole kind of master class on this, Margaret, in May. I think we're going to do something. But is there just a way that you could soften to the other side's view? I was on a call yesterday with a mutual friend that you and I share, Eric Kohner from the CTI world, and he and I have known each other. I met Eric in my coach training, so this is over 10 years now, and we stayed in touch over the years, and he actually ended up being the person who introduced me to Michelle and our business partner, who's now often at doing work with CTI, actually. And Eric and I are on opposite sides of the political spectrum, as you and I are. And yet you and I are very close friends, and Eric and I are very close friends, and we haven't abandoned each other or hardened against each other, because we have different views as to how we might best organize as a society in many re regards. So anyway, when you and I went to school, Margaret, we were encouraged, at least the school I went to, we were encouraged to have these debates. Now it seems like, oh, it's unsafe to have
It's
these
pretty crazy.
conversations.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. I think we've, yes, we do, we lose something when we aren't willing to talk, for sure, when we're not willing to open up. And so, yeah, how do you,
Soften
so
or
we've talked
soften.
about this idea of softening. I wanted to add one, which is I believe sometimes when we can't get there intellectually or even emotionally, like we're too locked in and too constricted to find a path to open our heart, that sometimes this sounds strange, but like just physically, actually, anybody who does yoga will hear me here, but there's like a physical way if you just, if you can just change your body and put your shoulders back and let your heart literally be open to the world, more vulnerable to the world. Sometimes even that shift in posture or physical, how you're sitting or standing can begin to also initiate a softening. That's
Yeah,
a
another
good
way, in the current environment, to us through the polarization is just get curious. Just get curious, like, about the other person. If nothing else, like, oh, I'm curious. Like, why you, like, even just to ask a friend or someone you're thinking about unfriending. That's a word now. Like, oh, I'm just curious why David may think the way he does, or I'm just curious as to why Margaret might think the way she does.
And we've had some few conversations that have started with like, okay, help me understand this. Right.
And you're, whatever the position is, because I have become aware that, and by the way, George Washington, the founder of our country, one of the founders, cautioned against political parties. I think for this very reason, is because we have two dominant, we basically have a duopoly of politics now. We have two parties, and the way they get power, which is what they want, is to separate us and divide us, not by bringing us together. So you got to really see what's going on. And we cannot have a country when we're at each other's throats all the time.
It
We're
goes
way
back.
off topic here, but it is in the realm of love and hate.
We are and we aren't, right? We're circling back to like this binary doesn't it has a perspective, but ultimately you can't live when there's only two choices, you know, when that binary has two choices. I'm going to totally pivot and ask you a different question. So your dad shows up everywhere in this book with his sayings and his wisdom, and there are several chapters that are named after things. Say more. How do you hear your dad's voice? How does he give you that wisdom as you go through your life?
Good question. Well, before we got on the podcast, I we you were we were talking about my next project, which is going to be a series of essays based on movie quotes.
Which
And
super fun, super fun.
it's, yeah, I'm having fun. You know, I'm about two or three essays into it right now, and so I'll bring a little bit of modern pop culture into my writing. And but there was a lot of wisdom. So the way he shows up, it's literally a voice. It's a voice in my head.
Is literally voice in your head.
It's a voice in my head. You know, I mean, any whenever I get writing on a topic or I hear a movie quote, I think my father just used to re recite these things. You know, I mean, and it was one of his ways of because film was his, and in some senses, this new book, as some of my others, are inspired by him. But film was one of his most appreciated forms of art, and so I grew up watching movies with my father on a black and white television. You know, so I these things are like. And it's not just that. I mean, I grew up, well, when you're a philosopher's son, you get a lot of philosophy, even though you don't, it's just like you get it by osmosis, you know, it's
Yeah.
just like it's everywhere. And, you know, he would, even when I was like fetching tools for him, working on the house, you know, there's probably some pithy little saying, you know, that would come out and somehow get embedded in my brain.
Yeah. Well,
So,
we've certainly got less is more, know your limitations. You know, there are a lot of things he said. And I know you've described him as stoic. Not warm and fuzzy.
it's interesting. He was stoic, and yet he had a lot of charm and warmth in his style. I would say that certainly with his students and with his friends, you know, with his family, it was a bit of a different story. And I think certainly with me, my sister, my younger sister who committed suicide, I think she was like the apple of his eye, and I think he was more affectionate with her than he was with my older sister and me. I can venture a guess. I think in my opinion it was his misreading of stoicism. I'm very rarely ever critical of my father, but in this regard, I do think he missed the mark in terms of his interpretation of stoicism. But in hindsight, I can see that what he saw, in withholding expressions of affection, I thought he thought that would make me stronger.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think.
In some senses it did, and in other senses it was very hurtful. So there you go, polarity again.
Was all those things. Yeah.
Yeah, but things like less is more, he lived that way. And you know, addition by subtraction, you know, I'm Lillian and I, my wife, who you know, and the audience knows, we live very much live this way now. We live in a very small space with very few material items, and although we've lived in larger spaces with more material comfort, but I'm seeing the wisdom of that. My life is more full with less.
Yeah. There was a way as I was reading that your father deposited you where he did, right? As all of our parents do, and that you've been on this journey to soften and to kind of pick up there. Like he taught you quite a lot. You've taken quite a lot from him, and then there's been this sort of journey of taking it in your fingers and playing with it like silly putty. Like, what did this mean? What didn't this mean? What more could be here? And that's sort of the spirit of the book. Not just, I wouldn't say that it's just about your father, but each of these thoughts and each of your nuggets of wisdom and each inspiration for the chapters.
Yeah,
That's
I would say, I did write a book about Stoicism and drawing on two of the original sources, Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius. Actually, Marcus Aurelius did write down his thoughts in a book called The Meditations. Epictetus did not write anything down, but his student, another one of the great sages of antiquity, never wrote anything down, but his students wrote some stuff down, and certainly Marcus Aurelius, arguably maybe the best Roman emperor, certainly was aware of that work. But when you read through those works, it's a left, it's more of a left brain kind of thing. There is a caution about the emotions. You see, this is where I think people get it wrong. Even my father got it wrong. It's not a denying of the emotions. It's a caution, if I were to maybe put it into a capsule, like, be careful, especially with the afflictive emotions. So in the Buddhist tradition, we would say there are emotions that are afflictive, like anger. And I wrote about anger in the book. And anger, in its most potent and severe form can be very, very harmful to others. And we're seeing a lot of that in the culture right now. We're seeing a lot of that. And I certainly expressed my fair share of it over the years, and with a lot of intention. And by the way, the Stoics would say this is unskillful to let your anger get hold of you and do harm to yourself and to others. And so some of these things are just life, lessons that I've learned the hard way. And certainly for my father, I would say that he probably went too far to one side of not expressing. You and I, before we got on the podcast, I mentioned Jim Dethmer, the 15 commitments of conscious leaders. And Jim will, encourage you to express, not repress.
And you do talk about in the chapter about anger, like it actually serves a really important and vital purpose. Like
It does.
we can neither pretend that we don't get angry or we don't notice our anger, nor let it completely rule us. And I think that's the challenge for all these things, isn't it? Finding a sweet spot in there.
Yeah. Anger would not survive as an emotion through evolution if it didn't serve some good purpose. And, anger can be a very strong no.
It can. I always think of anger as, somebody is stepping on my toes. Like my anger tells me that somebody is on the wrong side of one of my boundaries.
So anger is really helpful in establishing boundaries, and anger can also be useful in its skillful application in righting wrongs. We don't usually get too much into right and wrong, but for example, the wrong of slavery. Got righted through war.
Through war. Yeah.
So anger can be useful in motivating when you see some injustice. Can be very, very motivating. It's just that on the spectrum can be very, very harmful, when and the thing about anger is, and I talk about this, I think in the essay, is that it's an emotion served hot. It comes up fast and it's hot. At least it is for me.
Absolutely. And probably related to why people have so much trouble having conversations, exploratory conversations with people they disagree with. There's a lot of fear, right? I mean, receiving somebody's anger is, well, can be traumatic for sure, can feel traumatic. Yeah.
Can be.
So it does have a
And
pretty big impact if
there's
it
it
gets out of
does.
control. Yeah.
And there it's where grace can come in. Even if somebody has expressed their anger either with you or at you about some topic, the person who expresses the anger can give themselves the grace to, once they've cooled off, to go apologize.
Yeah.
And the person who is on the receiving end of an unskillful expression of anger can also give grace in accepting the apology.
Yeah, and right. Sometimes anger is messy, and yes, as you said, it runs hot, comes out hot. But if we don't express it, sometimes it lurks and it creates boundaries and walls in relationship.
I would say a skillful way to, and Jim will also talk about, anger is one of those things. You'll feel it in your body,
Yeah.
and unless you release it, it's gonna stay there,
Right.
and sometimes just moving your body. I think I shared it in the essay with my daughter at TCU. We were moving in, and
Yeah, you shared
this was like
that.
a long day of travel, and then moving in, and two Target
Target
runs,
tons, not one, but two.
two
Yeah.
Target runs, and
Inhumane.
inhumane, and I'm not only angry, but I'm hungry, so I'm hungry at this point. So we get everything set up in a room. We get everything in the room. And then she's like, "Oh, I think I want to move all the furniture around and reorient this whole thing."
Big boom.
Literally, I mean, like, I started throwing boxes out the door. Oh, yeah. That's how I just had to get that out of me. And that's how that energy can feel. And yes, I did express my anger and apologized later, and had time to deal with it. It's a human emotion.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
absolutely.
And she thankfully, in friendships, boy, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of grace for others right now. In difficult conversations, especially around people are angry about what may be happening right now in the United States. And there have been people who are very happy to see what's happening in the United States and have a lot of pent-up anger over what led to this.
Yeah.
So there are emotions on both sides of this. And so where can we find the grace to be with each other as we express ourselves, and even say it could be something as simple as like, "I'm so angry right now."
Yeah. I think
I'm really, yeah.
one of the
Go
things
ahead.
that's messy about anger is it's like a bank account in your body that gets deposits from a lot of different
Yes.
things. And so
Yes.
sometimes when you blow, your level of anger really is bigger than the situation perhaps called for. Right. So sometimes you are expressing anger at a person who might have been responsible for 15% of your anger, but in fact,
Right.
we're just carrying it around. So it's a very imprecise.
Right. Well, there's another essay in the book called Embrace, Don't Avoid Conflict. And I mean, now we're starting to maybe there had you been my editor for this, you would have woven like this tapestry between all these different ideas. But I do think that when we avoid conflict, disagreement, that'd be another way of a milder form of conflict, right? When we avoid it, and we continue to avoid it and avoid it, we talk about this in our positive intelligence program as the avoider saboteur.
Right.
It the anger builds up until the point where you're like, "That's it.
Yeah.
I've
Even
had
the
enough."
pleasers, the people who are like nice, or maybe especially the pleasers, like, man, when we blow, it's years of
Oh.
rage, years of like, it's like the 4th of July fireworks. It just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah,
I've had that
the avoid.
happen to me, like where I've just completely lost it. And
Right.
it is. It feels like months and years of pent up things. I'm better at expressing now in real time, but
Yeah, that's good. And I think that's important. And I do think that even if people are avoiding conflict right now because of the fear that it will harm the relationship, or they just don't want to really listen or be curious with the other person, and then they will avoid the person altogether because they're afraid of the conflict that might, because there's a disagreement. And there is a way, I think, there's no perfect way to have a conflict or have a disagreement. And but I will say, if we were more willing to have conversations that are prone to disagreement, maybe it would instead of just shouting at each other and just like being curious and having the disagreement, it might relieve some of the steam. That's an opinion.
So there are a lot of wonderful topics in this book, among them anger. There's another great chapter on happiness. I'm just curious, David, as we sort of come to the end of our time here, what would you like readers? And we will put a link in the show notes for people who want to pick up this book. What do you want readers to take away?
Well, several friends and family have, bought the book and are I got a great compliment from my father-in-law this weekend for Easter. He reads a lot. He's retired now. And he talks about how, he'll have like six books going at once, and he doesn't get through many of them. And but he said he's through my book right now.
Nice.
I was like, wow,
Yeah.
I made it. I'm in the positive territory. There you go, polarity, right?
Yeah.
But I encourage if you are looking to have a bit more peace in your life, get a copy of the book. The essays are like 2 to 3 pages long. Maybe it'll take you 5 minutes. And there are about 30 of them. And you could read one a day and just start your day with a bit of wisdom that comes to you from me via my father, the Buddha, Jesus, and the Stoics.
I love that. That's a great. I definitely felt like this would be an ideal bedside book to read just before you go to sleep, a chapter or just when you wake up to give you a focus or something to reflect on during the day.
That's how you get at least 60% of the way through it.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you for sharing your wisdom with the world through this book.
Thank you.
And I am,
Thank you.
as always, grateful for your friendship.
Yeah, thank you, Margaret, for having me on our podcast.
It was a really selective invitation.
And my scheduler, my what is it? What do they call the people who my agent was really tough to deal with, really.
Yeah, let me tell you. A bear, a total bear.
Okay. All right. Well, go get a
Thanks.
copy of the book. By the way, it's available on Amazon in all the different formats, hardcover, soft cover, Kindle, and audio. And the audio is pretty good. I had someone in the UK do the voiceover, and his voice is quite brings the book to life, or at least brings each essay to life.
The British person, is that what you said?
Yeah.
There you go. Who doesn't love a British accent? Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks,
Thanks,
friends.
Margaret. Yeah.
See you next time.